Hi, I'm Ben Folds. Today on the Arts Vote 2020 podcast series on arts and politics, I talk to Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici of Portland, Oregon. Congresswoman Bonamici is one of the strongest arts leaders in Congress. She founded and now co-chairs the Congressional STEAM Caucus, focused on getting the arts integrated into STEM education. She's also an active member of the Congressional Arts Caucus, focused on increasing funding for the National Endowment for the Arts. She's also a member on the House Committee on Education and Labor, specifically chairing the Subcommittee on Civil Rights and Human Services. So today's podcast is going to be a little different this time. We're going to learn from a key insider the ins and outs of developing arts education legislation and how arts advocates can play a role in getting those proposals passed. Thank you for being with us. I should let our listeners know, too, that I'm speaking with you from a congressional office on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us in my office, and I look forward to the important conversation.
Yeah, so I'm out there as a citizen. I know a little bit. I'm a little bit of a cheerleader, but it's really good to take it back to the beginning and hear, you know, this podcast goes out to listeners and advocates across the country, and we all have various levels of knowledge about how this works. So if we can just take it one step at a time. So the federal government does play a role in influencing what kids are learning about in school, although we know that it's mostly a state and a local issue.
Right.
Could you just sort of explain that federal government role in education, maybe separate that a little bit from the state and local, so people actually understand how the whole thing flows?
Absolutely. And thanks again for the conversation. So yes, I serve on the Education and Labor Committee here. And the federal role in education is something that people do ask about because they wonder, aren't the decisions made at the state and local level? The federal role is really about equity and equity of opportunity for students. Mm. And a lot of the federal education laws came about during the Civil Rights Movement. And the goal is really to make sure that students get a good public education, a well-rounded public education, regardless of their zip code or their parents' background or their race, sexual orientation, gender. And so it is really that equity piece that the federal government, where we step in. For example, the federal government provides funding for what's called Title I schools, and those are schools with high numbers of low-income students. Now, we know that they need extra resources because they're struggling with additional issues. And so the way the federal government comes in is to say, we want to make sure that if you're living in a rural town in the south, or if you're living in an urban town and city in the east or west, you still get a good public education that is well-rounded and includes the arts.
And so so the role then of the federal government, or the way that works, is actually a directive to the state and local, is saying, we're giving you this money, but we're telling you this needs to go here. The rest of it, you do what you need to?
Somewhat. There are, for example, with Title I, like I mentioned, for low-income students, the Title I funding needs to go to Title I programs. The Every Student Succeeds Act, which is the law that replaced No Child Left Behind, we need to leave behind No Child Left Behind, put more focus on well-rounded education. So there are something called the Title IV grant programs, and that's where the well-rounded education comes in. That funding is to be used. The federal government doesn't dictate curriculum and say you need to study this particular curriculum, but we give guidance to the school districts, because our goal is to again that equity piece, to make sure that students across the country, regardless of income, zip code, are being well served in our public schools.
I think a lot of people misconceptions about how you fund things, anything.
Sure.
Like when it comes to the arts, the most common question is, why don't you just let the private sector fund those things? And my answer is always, maybe you can help me out with this, but is the access for everybody part, the
exactly.
equality of it is not something that anyone that I know that with their best intentions could possibly know how to target.
Right. And of course, the private sector plays a role.
But again,
it's that access for everyone. And I think an example is, you know, when my kids, I grew up with music and art in my home. My mom was a piano teacher. She was a painter. We always had musical instruments and record albums, and that was what I grew up with. And then when my own children were ready to enter our public schools, big believer in public education, I said, where are the music and art teachers? And why are the class sizes so big? And why don't we have an orchestra? And so I started asking a lot of questions, became a parent volunteer and helping to provide those not only the resources, but even, you know, in the case of arts, with budget cuts at the state level, we were coming in and teaching art and helping with after school drama clubs and things like that to supplement, to make sure those students had those programs. But when you don't have active parent volunteers and you don't have those opportunities for everyone, students are losing out not only on the time when they're in school, but the benefit that comes from really educating both halves of the brain. And students, we know this, students who study in the arts are more likely to stay in school, to do better, and they become more creative. And that's really where the STEAM Caucus came about.
How do you suppose, I feel like everyone is aware of that data and those concepts and believes them. Where do we get hung up when we resist what the truth is, which is that kids, I mean, my kids are 20 now, but I can tell you they did better when they had a balanced diet of some arts and actually, you know, going outside and playing too. Like,
right.
The whole thing
it's like well-rounded education, right?
Well-rounded. What is the hang up that, in your opinion, and how can parents sort of, because I get asked that a lot, and I
sure.
don't know. That's
sure.
I just play piano.
Well, one thing is that I'm not sure everyone does know of those benefits,
mm-hmm.
and so as a policymaker, but you know, also as someone who's been an education advocate for a long time, I'm always trying to talk about that and talk about even students who aren't going to be professional artists like you are, Ben, still benefit from having arts in their education. But there's also a couple of reasons, and I think about my example in Oregon. We had a property tax measure that cut funding, and so with the budget limitations, oftentimes the arts are first to go. And I might mention Mr. Holland's Opus, the movie that was filmed
yes.
in Oregon, where they talked about the importance of band and music, but also the No Child Left Behind federal law. And what happened when that was in effect is that the schools would spend so much time focused on the subjects that were tested.
Right.
Because under No Child Left Behind, schools would get, and school districts and states would get federal funding based on test scores. And that is wrong on many levels.
Right.
Because it narrowed the curriculum. So if it wasn't tested, it wasn't a focus. But it also put too much focus on teaching to how to pass a test.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're teaching students how to pass their math and reading tests, you take the focus off of the other classes.
Right.
Now, a lot of people understand the connection between music and math, but there's also other connections between art and science, like risk-taking and thinking in new ways and all these things. So
yeah, communication.
One of my first goals in coming to Congress, because working on education policy at the state level, I knew we couldn't change this. We had to change No Child Left Behind, and we did that. Took the focus away from those test scores. Students need to be assessed because their teachers need to know how they're doing, and we need to know where the gaps are and where they need extra help, but they shouldn't. Those test scores shouldn't be used to penalize schools. So this Every Student Succeeds Act that passed a few years ago, that put the more focus on well-rounded education, and I got an amendment in there to encourage STEAM rather
Fantastic.
Than STEM, because I could tell you that story.
Yes, please do. Yes.
So I serve on the Science Committee and I serve on the Education Committee. And there were a lot of conversations
about
some
controversial concepts.
How important STEM is, science, technology, engineering, and math. I don't dispute that. They're very important. And we had a lot of conversations about how do we diversify the STEM workforce and how do we make sure that people are paying attention to STEM because that's where the careers are. And then I'd get out to the real world and I'd speak with employers and from small tech startups to big companies. And I would hear things like this. We are looking for people who can come up with new ideas. We want people who can work on a team. We want people who can communicate, people who can collaborate, people who can come up with new ways of solving problems, for example. But nobody was talking about how do we educate people to be creative right. and innovative and collaborative. And you hear about the innovation economy. So that's when I really started looking at that piece of if you have arts, design, music, arts broadly defined education, that enhances STEM. You get better scientists, better mathematicians, better engineers, better people in technology if they have that well-rounded education that includes the arts. And so the STEAM Caucus was born.
So what does it look like in a STEAM classroom? What would that mean?
Sure. The first time I visited STEAM Elementary School, Kotama Elementary, I visited some third and fourth graders, and they were talking about soil and agriculture, and they were growing worms, and they were talking about how the worms erode the soil. And then the soil, that's dirt, and the dirt is clay, and then they would take clay and make and glaze and fire pottery. So instead of saying now you're studying science and now you're studying art, it's connected, it's integrated right. and connected. So the students make the connection between the art and the science. And then at Highland Park Middle School in the Beaverton School District in Oregon, a nationally recognized STEAM school, they were talking about how everybody in the school participated in making murals of the Seven Wonders of Oregon. They even they had the special needs students. They had all the students in the school. They did these beautiful mosaics. They had students sorting colors and designing and building them. And I want to add, when we walked into the school, the jazz band was playing. And if I didn't look at them, I would have thought they were adults. But they were sixth and seventh graders,
amazing.
And they were doing a great job.
Yeah, I mean, as a musician, someone who grew up with a pretty well-rounded arts program in public school, I mean, we sat on the floor, and it was very bizarre school. It was an experimental school in the 70s. But one of the things that we did was we just all would sit and clap rhythms or sing things like once every 20 or 30 minutes. And that was kind of like our way of sort of – it doesn't seem to me that what you're saying is very controversial, but in your world, like in my bubble of the arts, that's undisputable. But do you find that feels controversial to explain to people that, of course, business people follow the artist into uncharted territory of neighborhoods to start businesses, and they follow them for ideas? Is it that controversial that we should be teaching art as part of the balance, just so that that's the learning ground for ideas and creativity?
I wouldn't call it controversial. And it seems as if the more we talk to people about it and the more we explain the benefits and show them the research, sometimes it comes down to resources. But with arts and also professional development, because with STEAM, typically it's arts integration. Now, I'm a firm believer in the arts for the art's sake, but with STEAM, it's integrating the arts yes. into science, technology, engineering, and math. So if there's professional development and the educators know how to do that well, that's where it really makes a difference. And I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, I took the then chair of the National Endowment for the Arts, Chair Chu, out to visit Kotama Elementary, which is a public school in Hillsboro, Oregon. And we had two sixth grade students, two girls, stand up in front of us. When I was in sixth grade, I would have been terrified to talk to grown-ups, right?
Yeah.
They stood in front of their member of Congress, the chair of the National Endowment for the Arts, and a whole bunch of adults, and explained the stop-motion animation film they had made about cell division. So not only did they understand cell division, they could communicate it both in the film that they made and to us as adults. And so if it was just STEM, maybe they would have had some book learning and they knew about cell division, but this way they made a film to explain it and they had that confidence. Chair Carter, Marianne Carter, came out to Oregon as well. It was during the summer, but the schools were closed, but we took her to places like the Portland Art Museum, where they have great educational programs, Body Vox, a great dance studio. And, you know, it's wonderful when we have people who appreciate the arts. And the more we explain, the more progress we make in arts education. So the STEAM Caucus has helped. I continue to advocate for arts education. Also, I think now more than ever, people are finding ways where they can find a place, a way to get together, to find common ground, to, you know, it's a challenging time for our country, and oftentimes music will do that. People can get together and listen to a concert or go see a film or go to a studio and make something, fine art. And that just gives people a way to you know, cross barriers and break down walls that's what music does for me as well, and probably for you as a musician.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly feel if when you see a room full of thousands of people singing something together. In my shows, they do it in three-part harmonies because they're pretty advanced.
Awesome.
You know, but if we were to have a discussion in language about a concept that triggered everyone, it could be a political thing or maybe even a basketball thing or something like that, they wouldn't sing in harmony anymore. And I think that's interesting about music, that you see people can do that, communicate on that level, and then, you know.
Well, we need more harmony.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's actually sort of when I play with symphony orchestras, which is very regularly, I always make a little speech to the audience about the symphony orchestra being the symbol of civilization, because it's people working together in concert, right, in harmony, all that stuff. If you don't have the symbol, that's why we like flags. Americans for the Arts talk about reinstating the National Assessment of Educational Progress into the nation's report card. Could you talk about that?
Well, one of the things that concerns me is the NAEP, the National Report Card, without including progress on the arts, it sends a message that the arts aren't important. And I'm very concerned about that because, as I explained, the arts are important. They're very important to education. And again, even for students who don't go on to be artists, it still helps them with their thinking process. It helps them to be creative and innovative. And the message with taking it out is that it's not as important, and I'd be very concerned about that.
Yeah, I talk to a lot of fans about music and creativity in school. We bring in a public school teacher often before my shows, and we have just a little talk about creativity,
great,
and questions,
that's great,
and answers and stuff. And I think the most common question is, because I think parents are frustrated. Well, it depends on where you are. You might go through one town, and they've got the most incredible arts programs you've seen in school, and then one town over, and I think the pattern is, there's not as much money,
right,
in the other place. That you've got some really nice lady driving to six schools in a hatchback with broken instruments going from place to place, and that's all they've got. My parents always want to know, what can we do? And how can we talk about it? And you're so, I love the way you talk about it. You're very articulate and clear. And it's exactly, I just want to bring you around and say what she said. Because
that's very kind, Ben. Thank you.
No, it is. I'm not going to buy all your vinyl and everything. I'm going back and getting the old deep cuts as well. I've gone through all seasons. Like I've gone, okay, well, I'm going to learn the statistics and go out and tell people, here's the dropout rates. And it's like, okay, well, that's putting people to sleep. What else can I say? But it's very normal for a parent, and it's not a partisan thing out in the world, at least that I've noticed.
No, it's not partisan.
Because everyone's got kids that they want them to succeed. And
absolutely,
they have businesses, they want those to succeed. And so they hire the same people that you're talking
to. So is your question, what can parents do?
Yeah, what can parents do, and what can people who are advocates,
sure,
who want to talk about it do?
Well, it's important to have that background. I don't think you need a lot of numbers, but it just to know that students do better in school. They're more engaged when they participate in the arts. But it also, again, gives them the opportunity to show their creative side, to be unique. And I think parents can talk with their, because so many decisions are made at the local level, they can talk with their school board. If they can't bring in a separate art teacher, they can have professional development to teach, have the educators learn how to integrate the arts into their lessons that they're already doing. But they can also advocate for those programs like band, like orchestra, music classes, art classes.
And with their school advocate, board. Just go
to their
the school
board.
Board.
Absolutely. Go to their school board,
okay,
and talk about, the workforce today. When you look at, we have all these fascinating conversations about the jobs of the future, artificial intelligence, all these things that are going to be part of our future. How do you educate people today for the jobs of tomorrow? It's not the technical skills, because those will change by the time today's students get to the workforce. It's teaching them how to think creatively and critically. And so arts education is going to help them for their future as well. We have a lot of big challenges in this country. And we want really creative ways to find out how to address the climate crisis, and how to bring peace to the Middle East, and how to cure cancer, and all these things that are going to require creative thinking. And so if students have that opportunity to be creative, they're going to help solve the problems of tomorrow.
When you were growing up, did you play music yourself?
Well,
you
my mom was a piano teacher, so I did play a little piano, sadly I didn't keep it up. I mean, I have a piano and I can play a little bit, but I regret that now. I wish I would have played more. And but I've always had music in my life and art in my life. My mom was kind of always ahead of her time, and she did these really modern art paintings, and we had, as I explained, music in the house. I grew up outside of Detroit, and we go down to the Detroit Institute of Arts, and this was amazing. I don't know if you've been there, but if you ever go to Detroit, go to the Detroit Institute of Arts. They have these amazing Diego Rivera murals that tell the history of the auto industry, and I grew up with all of that, and so I really want every student to have the opportunity to learn through the arts, and teaching. When students learn about music, it helps them write poetry and be better writers and communicators.
That's
right,
a big one for
exactly.
me.
Exactly.
So currently, what legislation are you working on right now for the arts?
Sure. Well, I continue to work for full funding for the Title IV grants, which I talked about, the Every Student Succeeds Act grants that help with well-rounded education to make sure that all students have that opportunity. And we're also working on a Building Blocks of STEAM Act that will help with a collaboration among the National Science Foundation and NASA. And the Department of Education, again, to elevate the conversation about why STEAM is important with the people who are going into the sciences. So that is one piece of legislation we're working on, in addition to the very important funding piece for the arts. And again, continue to communicate about the benefits of arts education, because it does make a difference. It makes a difference for our future.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you learned as much as I did today talking to Congresswoman Bonamici. Be sure to subscribe to the Arts Vote 2020 podcast series with Ben Folds, that's me, on Anchor or any of your favorite podcast apps. Please go to artsactionfund.org/podcast for more info.